Get the latest sports in 1 hour. It's Crunch Time, weekdays from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. And now,
check this out.
It's Crunch Time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green-lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. That's going to be cool.
Are they
going
to bust in here and arrest us?
It's Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score.
And we welcome you to today. I am making this pronouncement. April 2nd, 2020 is officially the weirdest day of my life. And that's me talking. I'm sitting in our spare room where I've got workout equipment, a bed, file cabinet. My wife found a table out in the garage where she set up a little desk for me. I've got my laptop. I've got the company laptop so we could Skype in and I could talk to you. I got notes all over the place. I'm using my Nordic Track seat I pulled behind me to keep some stuff, kind of my backup show notes. And I'm doing this radio show from my home in the Bethel area of Eugene. Do I even need to say anything more? I guess I better, because we got another 2 hours and 58 minutes to fill. But I always said, was it my dream to never have to leave the house and be able to get paid? And I did not really. If somebody would have said, well, this is a way it'll work, I would have passed. But here we go. Gentlemen, ladies, people, start your engines. As always, I guess we're hearkening back almost 3 weeks to Nick is now producing. He's in the studio, on the board, with access to music and sound files and the phone and, well, unless something drastic changed since I left this morning, other things too. He could see outside. What do you guys got on your mind today? As always, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline is open. 284-8571. You could hit me up via the text line, 321-0824. I was on a business site, and in the midst of all the updates and who's shutting down what and what's coming out of the White House, what's coming out of Congress, what's coming out of Wall Street and Main Street and governor's offices and around the world regarding this scary stuff, says, here's the article I was reading right before we signed on. 20 board games and puzzles for the best family game night. First of all, no on puzzles. I will play almost any game. Put a puzzle in front of me. Basically, what you're asking is to have our friendship ended and to have that puzzle and the box set on fire. Many years ago, I got sick. I was home. I was in eighth grade. And somebody said, to pass time, try this puzzle. I put probably a third of it together. Then I started getting frustrated, and I wasn't blessed with the most patience in the world anyway, and I swore off puzzles. And I didn't need a 12-step program or rehab or anything. It was like, hate will be my rehab, and I'll never go near that again.
Hi, Steve.
So. Hey, Nick, what's up?
Can I jump in here? I'm going to jump in here. I thought at first you not being a puzzle guy was incredibly shocking. Then, like you mentioned, you have no patience for things, so that's very understanding. When you play board games, and do you play Monopoly? And have
you're
you
still
ever?
I'm
still here. Hello? Nope. All right.
All righty, I don't know exactly what happened to Nick. He was about to tell.
Well, Okay, I am. I'm going to jump in here because I think we're having some technical difficulties. Steve maybe having a little internet connection problem of some kind. It seemed like he dropped off for a minute there. So Nick Rogers here for Sports Talk with Steve Tannen as he's doing the show from home, and I've taken over in the producer's role. It's not a Tuesday. It's a Thursday. I guess I'm going to try and troubleshoot this with Steve and maybe get him back on the line. I'm not sure if he's there or not or can hear me. Little odd that we dropped off like that. So if you have any questions, comments, questions, concerns, or anything, you can hit us up on the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, 284-8571. As we try and get Steve Tannen back, I guess. Board games are an interesting one because in the age of the quarantine and social distancing and things like that, you're kind of, well, at least for me, I'm locked in with just my, well, not locked in, but staying inside with just my girlfriend. And so it's really hard to, to play a board game without two people. So if you have any recommendations for good two-person board games, I know there's things like checkers and chess, maybe a battleship, something like that. So, you know, if you have any recommendations for that, as I'm trying to troubleshoot with Steve here, it appears that we've had a really bad time to go with our internet to go down here. So that's kind of a problem. So you're definitely going to have to text us 284 or call us 284-8571. Recommendations for good two people board games, thoughts on Monopoly of some kind. We'll just try and figure this out. So. Or if you have any comments about it, I guess there's no sports or anything that's going on. If you want to have any best of lists or anything like that, what you've been doing during your social distancing, stay at home, things like that. I've gotten really good at doing making grilled cheese sandwiches. And so I'm going to talk about sandwiches here. I have found that the key to a good grilled cheese is a couple of things. One of them is... When is the cheese? And I think the best thing to do with the cheese is you have to have multiple types of cheese, and you've got to have small slices of the cheese. This really helps it melt better. So I'm not sure if you're doing big blocks of cheese, you're kind of cutting it yourself, or what's going on there. There we go. Yep, internet went down. So I don't know if you buy the sliced cheese or you get blocks of cheese and kind of cut them down or what you're doing on that. But I found if you get really thin slices and then maybe you kind of cut them in half so you don't get the super long big chunks of cheese but a little bit smaller, you can kind of layer them up. I found really any kind of cheddar is melts great, obviously. Pepper jack, really good. Colby jack is actually the one that I found melts the best just on its own. That is fantastic. So you get lots of layers of cheese and kind of pile that up there. Now you can throw in, you know, your turkey, ham, or if you want to throw some tomatoes in there, something like that, totally okay. I always like to make sure if you're going to add something to that, that you keep it in the middle. So you want the cheese to melt as the bread toasts, to kind of melt in almost like a forging of cheese to turkey meat. And that's kind of what you need to figure out there. And, basically then as the cheese melts into the turkey, into the tomatoes and red onions, whatever you're putting on your sandwich, that just makes the better cheese. The other key is what you put on the bread as you're making the sandwich. And this is on the outside of the bread that helps it toast. The way to go is mayonnaise. Really, mayonnaise is the way to go. It's a lot easier to spread than butter. You don't have to wait for butter to kind of like warm up or anything, or you throw a bunch of butter in the pan as it melts, and then you throw the bread in, and it's just kind of getting soaked up, things like that, and adds a little bit of flavor too. But you throw some mayonnaise on the outside of a grilled cheese and just kind of, and you stick it in the pan, it toasts up perfectly at the right amount of time as the cheese starts to melt. And that's the way to make a perfect grilled cheese, really. So that's kind of all I've got. Small slices of cheese, mayonnaise on the outside, and keep any extras that you want on the inside so that the cheese melts to the outside and you get that full melt. And, of course, the best way to eat a sandwich is to cut it diagonally. It's the best way. Sandwiches taste better when they're cut diagonally, and it's the way to go. I forgot which coach it was, but this goes back to an SEC media day a couple years ago, where one of the coaches was asked the best way to eat a sandwich. And he said that he's perfected the 10-bite sandwich, which I think is truly incredible. But the key to that is the diagonal cut. That's what you have to do there. And without the diagonal cut, you got nothing. And the 10-bite sandwich was very interesting, too, because at the media day, He drew it out on a piece of paper where his bites were. And so you get you end up with your classic triangle once you've cut your square sandwich in half. And your first bite is a big bite right out of the middle. And that's kind of the key to all of this, is how big of a bite on the first bite that you can get. And the second one is you go to either corner. Again, big bites, that's 2 and 3. And then you kind of split up 4 and 5, the last 2 bites, so you're not swallowing a sandwich whole. You double 5, you get 10. There you go. This is Sports Talk without Steve Tannen, as Steve was at home, but our internet here at the studio at the station went down, and there's no one in the building for me to be able to get in contact with, because I think I'm the only person here. So we're trying to get that internet connection fixed as quickly as possible. So why don't we take a break? A little bit early here. I'm going to go try and fix some internet work on our phone lines, because we're having some problems with that as well. So we'll be right back with a little bit more Crunch Time, hopefully with Steve Tannen, next on 95.3 The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953.
So I would like to see our team have an opportunity to compete for the Stanley Cup. But obviously, as days go by, and this is just us talking sports now, I've there's a lot of other things going on that have to turn around for the season to happen. But if that did happen, I'd love to see a 31-team playoff and give those pesky Devils an opportunity at bringing the Stanley Cup back home to New Jersey. So
a 31-team playoff. That's a weird bracket, huh? That's PK Subban of the now on the New Jersey Devils talking about if somehow they make it back, just everybody in the playoffs. Nah. By the way, welcome back on many levels, man. You want to talk about? Hey, Steve. Hey, Nick. You guys are on the air, doing well. You're having a conversation. No, everybody stop. The phones and the internet go down. And I'm here thinking, all right, I'm the one on a remote location. And I'm me. So clearly I kicked something or I unplugged a wire. And then I'm like, now, wait a minute. I'm home. My Xfinity high speed is just, it's almost flawless. And then all of a sudden I realized, yeah, I'm talking to myself. Not that I don't do that far too often for anybody's comfort, but here it is. I forgot. We were having a conversation early on. It was Nick and I. You were making a point, and the world stopped for about 9 minutes. So I don't remember where we were. I know you've been running all over the building and doing a great job of getting us back on the air.
Well, I was gonna ask you your patience level.
Puzzles.
Puzzles and board games, the classic things that you talk about on sports radio. I was asking you what it meant, or your patience level, and if you've ever finished a full game of Monopoly, since completing a puzzle and playing a game of Monopoly till the end are both about the same thing.
I used to play Monopoly a bunch. And because to me, there it was one-on-one competition. I'm not one of these, like, I'm not going to climb a mountain. The mountain's going to beat me. The puzzle's going to beat me. I'm going to have an aneurysm before I even get to the clouds and the birds and the trees. And then I'm going to wind up chewing on them and spitting them out and finding who created the idea of puzzles and go after them. But Monopoly with the money and the competition. Plus, we used to play, when I used to play with my buddies, we used to tuck cash. Like if you had an extra 100 or 500, when you usually saw it, they'd be like, oh, Steve's about broke. And I would reach into my sleeve and pull out like a 500.
Of course you did.
Not cheating, tucking. Big difference. It wasn't. I didn't steal the money. It's money I slid underneath like the board, or if I slid underneath my thigh on my chair when nobody was looking.
Yeah, like hiding the money in the mattress or something like that.
Right. I think I trust these crazy banks. Give me this FDIC insured. I'm not buying it for 1 second. So, yeah, no puzzles. But they list some games that I never even heard of. It's called Throw Burrito, a dodgeball card game from the creators of, seriously, Exploding Kittens. And it says, a game you never knew you needed. It's a combination of cards and dodgeball. It can act as a way to de-stress and let out some energy while you're cooped up. Here's an interesting one, Codenames. And I love how they, whoever did the article, I would assume got all these games because it gives the price and the website where you can get it. Although it looks like it's all Amazon. So, who's ready for Kids Against Maturity? This obviously is, if you've ever played, have you ever played Cards Against Humanity?
I have, yes. It's quite a popular game.
Yeah. That's a game that you wouldn't be that comfortable playing with other people because it can get a little down there, out there.
It's, inappropriate, not good for work, not PC, and more often than not, and it's just kind of dig to the deepest, darkest places of your minds that you normally shouldn't go to, and then you just kind of go there all the time.
Yeah, when our grandson was born back in 2013, my wife, so his grandmother, his great-grandmother met them from Missouri and were playing with the kids. And they played that, and the great-grandmother had the best time and was coming up with the most vile, disgusting answers of anybody. So there you go. All right. There's also Betrayal at House on the Hill. And it says, if you want to make your quarantine creepy, check out this game that has you build a haunted mansion, and then the challenge is to escape it alive. And the game takes more than an hour to play. All right. The song. Oh, and then they have a 2,000-piece jigsaw puzzle that they might as well call Steve's aneurysm because it's never going to happen. All right, folks, we have the internet back. We have phone lines. We've got Nick. We've got me. We've got you. I think it's time to do a radio show. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Good suggestion from a listener who happens to be a friend of ours and has one of our favorite doggies, Ren, a chocolate lab. He says, talk about the influences, who you listen to on the radio back when you were younger, kind of the influences. And, you know, it's interesting for somebody like Nick or even a 40-something, from the time you started following sports and listening to all sports radio, A, it existed because all sports radio was born in New York in July of 1987. So that's 33 years ago. So if you're 40, yeah. For somebody like me, they had sports shows, but there wasn't all sports radio, even in New York, until then. And like, for example, the station will be at WNBC, and I think it's the Mississippi is the cutoff, where you get starts with a K if you're west, the W if you're east. So WNEW in New York had an AM and an FM, and the Giants, the football Giants, were on the AM, and they had a guy, Jonathan Schwartz, who was a DJ and a sports guy and a talk show host guy and a music, like a savant almost when it came to his knowledge of like big band and Sinatra and music from the swing era. And then he would pop on a Sunday a little before, kind of like Jerry and Jorgie and Joey and Terry do the Oregon Sports Network pregame football show, and then we're on before that. He was kind of like we were. He was on a little before that. And he would have these guests, and he would interview, like, officials. Like, he did an interview once with a basketball official named Mendy Rudolph. Oh, by the way, I should mention that Aaron Fentress is going to join us today at 3:30. I didn't want to get too into it without mentioning that. Yeah, he's... So... Mendy Rudolph was an NBA ref back in the time when I started following sports, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old. And he said that he was at a Knicks-Celtics game at the old Boston Garden, and he had to catch a train. And he was basically standing by the exit waiting for the game to end. It was a close game, but so he's counting it down. 4, 3, 2, 1, and he took off like a bat out of hell, ran as fast as he could. He was a young guy, and he jumped on the train, and he says, I swear I'll never know how this happened, but already on the train with a cigarette and the evening edition of the Boston Globe was Mendy Rudolph, who had just officiated the game. He said he must have had a special out, like a special exit at that end of the garden that was closer, but he was like, I just ran, jumped on the T-line, and there was Mendy Rudolph in a raincoat with a Boston Globe smoking a cigarette. And I was like, that's a magical story. You know, I grew up on Marv Albert on the radio calling Knicks and Rangers games. I think he got the gig in 1966. Howard Cosell on WABC at 5:55 every Friday would do a special segment called Speaking of Sports. And the reason I always listen to that is because from basketball season through baseball season, which overlapped, regardless of whether it was Little League, middle school, you know, intramural leagues or high school, every after school, you either had your practices winding down about 5:30 or your games started around 6, you know. And so you'd get to the gym or the field, and I would always be like in the car. He would sign off at about 5:57. It was a 2-minute thing. They'd do their commercials, take you to the top of the hour, and I'd jump out of the car, you know, with my either my basketball or my mitt, and, you know, start warming up for the game. We generally had to be there at 6 for a 6:30 start. So, I mean, the vivid memories that brings back, I mean, when you consider it was 1,200,000 years ago, it's amazing. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I guess, though, we're probably going to be getting Fentress on before I am able to take a call. But feel free to text in. There's a few things I want to get to today. And if you didn't hear my conversation from Tuesday, it was in this hour. It was right around now with Javis Lewis, the former Duck defensive back. It was really good. I mean, he's a terrific guy. He's really done well. So I think you'll get a kick out of it. We'll do that at... let's say 5:30, right around 5:30. All right. Let's see if we can't score Fentress. I will send him a message because Nick said he tried to call him. And, of course, he got a busy signal. It's going to be one of those days. Somebody said... one of their favorite sports announcers, Keith Jackson. Everybody likes Keith Jackson. I'm wondering, I would guarantee a guy like that somewhere, somehow started in radio. I don't remember ever hearing him on the radio. Maybe would now be a good time to break, or do we do that already when we were All right, there you go. All right, folks, it's been an interesting day, to say the least. And we've hit that time on a Thursday where we seek some normalcy and get our view from the north. Keeping us covered, Duck football, Seahawk football, for the Athletic. Believe it or not, in my notes, I have written down Atlantic. I am losing my mind. On Twitter, use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, I've lost it. How are you doing sanity-wise?
I'm cool so far, man. And maybe I'm benefiting from having the kids around and hanging out and, you know, mixing in some board games, some video games, watching some movies. You know, it's been quality time with the kids. I mean, I hate to try and put a positive spin on something that's obviously, you know, getting worse and worse. As you see the numbers, I was like, good God, well, you know, how bad is this going to get? But I haven't reached the point of losing my mind yet. Hopefully I won't.
Have your wife and kids reached the point where they're like, all right, Dad, it's enough. Get out.
Well, my wife is working. She's a pharmacist.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and fortunately for her, she's a specialty pharmacist, so she works in the office, but they've chopped up the place into the point we only have four people in each quadrant, so they're not all working together. So right. She's not dealing with the public as a retail pharmacist, so that's good. So it's basically me and the kids. My daughter is the only one who's kind of freaking out. She's been great about it. The first few days, she's kind of a pill because she's like, how can I not see my friends? Because she's such a social butterfly. She's 15. But she gets it. But she gets it now, and she, you know, just FaceTimes with them. They have FaceTime parties and things like that. But and my son's just loving it. Anyway, he gets to play video games. We got to do some baseball drills. He gets to play video games. I can't tell him, you know, you can't play. You're playing too many video games. Like, what else are you going to do? I mean, he does the guitar. He reads his book and stuff like that. But, you know, it's like we're just – I have to admit, I've played a lot of Madden with him, so that's been kind of fun.
You know what? I also realized what's one of the common themes you'll hear about a high-level athlete or a high-level coach. I'm walking away from the game to spend more time with my family.
My family, exactly.
His family's like, Dad, you ain't using us as an excuse. Just
exactly.
Tell him you want to quit.
Exactly.
Don't pin this on us. all right. So, sports-related news. Oregon football. Wow. Most felt the gig was Tyler Shucks. At the end of the day, he's still an unproven. He's really not done a bunch on the field. Enter Anthony Brown from Boston College. He's had some bad knee injuries, but he's experienced. What do you make of this decision to, which I think kind of came out of nowhere, to bring in a vet transfer?
It's fascinating. I mean, every time this kind of thing happens, whether it's a quarterback competition, it's always fascinating because it's such a do-or-die situation. Right? It's not like other positions where you can play multiple
right.
people, and you do. You have your starter, you have your backup at quarterback. So, you know, there's so many different levels to look at this. The bottom line is that only Crystal Ball knows for sure why they did this. And there's so many different ways you could go with it. So, one, the obvious one would be they don't believe Shuck is ready, and they went out and got a transfer who's been there, done that. And this guy's pretty good. He's not great, but he's good, and he was getting better. Like he's a legit quarterback you can win with. So if that's the case, is that necessarily a death knell for Shuck? No. Just because they don't feel he may be ready this year doesn't mean he won't be ready the next year. But it would raise concerns that, okay, they know he's not ready. What does that mean? Et cetera, et cetera. The other way this could be is that they love Shuck. He's going to be the guy. They think he's going to be difficult to beat out. But here's a grad senior who wants to land somewhere where he at least has a chance to compete, and he's been offered a chance to compete. Right? So if that's
right.
the case, then that's good for everybody because then now you know at least Shuck is not a question mark. They believe in him, which is what they've said. Now, my view on this is that there's no way this kid's coming to Oregon without at least thinking he has a chance to succeed and start unless he had no other option. And that's what's fascinating to me. I wrote about that a little bit. I'm like, we don't know what his options were. We don't know why he chose Oregon. He chose Oregon because Oregon just lost Herbert, and he knows that at least there's a job opening. Or do you choose Oregon because they're like, dude, we need you, come to Oregon.
Right.
So you can just go so many different ways with this. After talking to the people I talked to and looking at history, I mean, I read about this in my article today on The Athletic. I went back in history to some of the greatest QB competitions the last 25 years that usually produce a really good quarterback. You want competition, so this is good in that regard. I also went back to the transfers. Akili Smith, Masoli, Vernon Adams, Dakota Prukop. Those guys were brought in for a reason, and they all were starters. Like, I can't I'm not saying there haven't been any transfers that didn't start, but most of them at least have come in and been the starter. So that, to me, tells me that this guy has a chance to win it. But what people are telling me is that basically the consensus seems to be that they still believe in Tyler. This is not an indictment on Tyler, but that they want competition. They want him to be pushed. And let's say he beats this guy out. If he beats this guy out, Shuck's going to be a star. I'm going to tell you right now, if he beats him out, that I believe that Brown is legit, Shuck is going to be a 3-year star. If he doesn't beat him out, he could still be a 2-year star, assuming that the competition was close. If it was close, then you're like, oh, but Brown wins it, then you know Shuck is still in there and can come in if needed, and he's going to be the guy in 2021, 2022. So I just think it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. They recruited 5 quarterbacks, Oregon has, under Taggart and Cristobal, and they still went out and got a transfer. And that's fascinating. That's always fascinating.
You know, I'll tell you what, I went back during my time here, and if they brought in a transfer, he might not have stepped in and been the man, but he was in a heated competition. Because I know this kid Brown's from Jersey, and he's in Boston. He's not going across the country just to hang out for a year and maybe get a shot. I think it's logical to feel like it's an open competition. That makes sense?
100%. I totally agree. Like, there's, and again, it comes back to what were the other options. Let's say he went out and looked for a place to start, and it was like no one said you have a chance to start, except, so then he had to just pick a place. Well, I'm just going to go somewhere. Well, let's see, Oregon. I know they lost a starter, and the guy who's the probable starter has thrown 12 passes in his career. That's a great place for me to have a chance to start. And then maybe that's why he came here. Or they said to him, like I said before, you have a chance. You have a real strong chance to come and win this. Like Vernon Adams. Let's go back to Vernon Adams. This is some of the funniest few months of my career, dealing with people who honestly believe that Lockie had a chance to beat out Vernon Adams. Like, I don't know how many people on Twitter were just not even just discussing with me, but calling me a complete idiot for believing that this 1AA guy was going to beat out Lockie. I'm like, why would he leave a place where he was a god to come to Oregon? Like, he's coming to Oregon to be the guy. As soon as he passes this math test, the competition is over. Remember that?
I just remembered that.
Yeah, and there was one key source I would talk to on this, and I asked him, I said, all right, be honest, is this competition? He's like, well, of course he's got to compete. I go, okay, he can't come in and throw the ball backwards. He can't throw it underhanded, right? He can't throw it off guys' heads. But what I'm saying is, if he comes in and he's the guy you saw on film against Oregon State and Washington, two teams he lit up, is he going to start? And the guy's like, oh, yeah, of course. Now, I'm not saying this is that situation, though, because I think there's more belief in Shuck than there was in Lockie. I think that's a given. I think Shuck is just a better talent than Lockie was.
Sure.
But again, you're dealing with 28 starts versus 0 starts. And here's the other thing, too. Brown, like, I went and watched a lot of – I was up to 5 minutes working on the article I posted. I watched a lot of video on him. He's good. Like, he's not great, but he's good. He can make – he had one highlight I tweeted earlier, and I wrote about in the article where, you know, he had to scramble out of the pocket. He's on the run, and he threw that ball 60 yards in the air on the run, and it dropped right into the receiver's hand in complete stride. Like, it was beautiful. Other plays, his escapability, he's not a great runner. He's more like a Herbert or Darren Thomas 2010 type runner. He's not a Mariota type, but he can move. He's great with play action. They ran a pro-style system It's my understanding that Moorhead likes to do a lot of play action, get the quarterback moving out of the pocket, move him around. He does really well at that. So he fits what they want to do, and he's a veteran senior who was getting better until he injured his knee again. I think it's going to be a fascinating competition, and it's going to be just amazing, I think, to see how this plays out.
Yeah, and for anybody who's not familiar with him, barring injury, he would have been a three-year starter. And like you said, he was way better his third year than he was his first year, whether it was accuracy, cutting down on his picks. But no,
right,
like
exactly.
You said.
Yeah, he only threw two picks his final year to nine touchdowns. I think it was a pick every, I did the math, 65 attempts, which was not Mariota or Herbert levels, but it was much better than his career total is one every – oh my God, one every 30 attempts. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, he's improved right. A lot in that area. So if you're Oregon, you're looking at a guy who was on the ascension, right? He was rising into becoming really good, and then he got injured, and now you got him, and they have to be thinking, we're getting a senior guy who was not reached his peak yet. And so that's why it tells me there's no way this guy is going to have a chance to start. I do not believe that. And if he doesn't, then Tyler Shuck's going to be Heisman candidate in 2 years.
All right, let's talk with Aaron Fentress of The Athletic. So the NFL says if there's a season, we'll see an increase in playoff teams, 7 in each conference. But the big news there, the top seed gets a bye, the 24. I mean, just look at the Chiefs this past season. By the way, based on booing, I'm guessing you're not a fan.
Now someone's gonna say, you know, old man yelling at cloud, get off my lawn. Fine, whatever, get off my lawn. I don't like this at all. First of all, I think the playoff system was perfect. You and I remember when they went from 4 to 5, right?
Yep.
And we also remember when they went from 5 to 6. Okay, going to 6 from 7 to me is just gratuitous. Now they're in gratuitous land. Now they're like, to me, they're no different than the NBA with 8. When the NBA went to 8 and they went to 4 7-game series on each side, I was like, come on. There used to be a bye for 1 and 2. There used to be at least a short series in the first round. Now this is just all gratuitous cash grab nonsense, and it just insults my intelligence in terms of how I view competition. I do not think it's fair at all whatsoever to have the number 2 seed have to play number 7 in the first round. That's the team I'm worried about. I'm not even worried about 7 being in it as much as I'm worried about the fact that now 2 is less meaningful because you don't get the bye. And here's the thing about this kind of thing that bothers me. I don't want to see a team 9-7, 10-6 have a chance to wreck a potential great matchup. Now, we've seen it happen before, and that's just life. That's the NFL. The Giants did it a couple times. You know, these things happen, okay? It's just par for the course. But now you've increased the likelihood of that happening by putting 7 in there, and you create a situation where, you know, at the end of the day, I think we all want to see the Final Four be what we believe to be the best 4 teams and not including 1 or 2 teams that just got hot one day, which is what happens in the NFL. And that's why it just drives me bonkers. Now, some people have made fun of me because they're like, what if it's the Bears? Okay, I'll admit, I'm a hypocrite. If it's the Bears, I'm going to be cheering them on because I'm a Bears fan. But as an objective person, I'm telling you right now, I just don't like it. There's nothing I can do about it. It's going to happen. And you know what's going to happen next, too, don't you? 8. Someone's going to say,
8.
Well, wait a minute. Why is 1 just sitting there doing nothing? Why not have 1 play 8? Yeah, how much money can we make? So I'm going to put out a calculator. They'll figure it out. Done. So I'm against it. Boo.
Yeah, I'm more about you're a 2 seed in a conference. I mean, you could be 13-3, 14-2. That's a badge. You earned something. You should not be playing that first weekend.
No.
That's what bothers me just as much.
Yeah, exactly. It's a week that you might risk injury. It's a week that, and again, it's the NFL, man, any given Sunday, we all know that. And so it's very conceivable that 7 could beat 2. And that could be argument to play it, but to me, it's argument not to, because at the end of the day, I'm going to, like, okay, the NFL, like, even this year, and someone could make this argument, well, it happens anyway, so why worry about it? Well, we saw the Titans against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. Who wanted to see that matchup? Everyone wanted to see Baltimore versus Kansas City, and Baltimore lost to a 6th seed. So you know it can happen right there. There's a great example. Why increase the likelihood of that happening by adding another lower tier team, a 7th seed, into the mix, creating more opportunities to ruin the more marquee matchups you could get and should get in the playoff system. Anyway,
nope.
Rant over.
Greedy, greedy, mo money. That's what it's all about. All right, I'm going to let you get back to baseball drills and video games and staying safe, but especially now, much appreciate the time and content, my friend. You have yourself a safe, healthy week.
Hey, you too. Take care.
All right, take it easy. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You could also text us, 321-0824, on Twitter at 953thescore for the station. For the show, at Sports Talk 953. For Nick, it's at Rick Nodgers. How about that? A move was made in sports, and we got to talk about it because it's current. That's not something we've had an opportunity to do much in recent weeks. All right, I guess we're going to come back and sneak in a somewhat abbreviated lightning round coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
You know, there's a handful of guys like him and Peyton and the group that I have the utmost respect for. I don't understand how he's doing it. I mean, he's still threw a couple balls in games. I'm saying, how's this guy throwing this ball this far? He's incredible. I mean, I have the utmost respect for him as a player or competitor. You know, for us, we got the guy we thought was the right fit for us, but this is a guy who I respect and admire immensely, obviously, along with everybody else.
Welcome back. That was Frank Third Reich, the coach of the Indianapolis Colts, talking about why they preferred Rivers over Brady. Then he's praising Brady. I'm going to get into that in a little bit, but real quick, women's college basketball note from the Oregon State Beavers. Their leading scorer, co-leading scorer with Michaela Pivick, Destiny Slocum, has announced she is transferring. So, the Beavs lose their top two scorers, 15-point-a-gamers, and that's a pretty tough break for Coach Ruick. I don't know why. You know, you wonder if it's a case of if this virus has any kind of impact, if it's about, you know, being closer to home. She's from Meridian, Idaho, a terrific player. Kat Tudor was a senior. She will be going. Aaliyah Goodman, I guess, will be one of the big guns returning next year. I guess they had a big, what was her name, Taylor Jones, who was just a freshman, and he's recruited very well. Anyway, welcome back the home stretch of a Thursday as far as crunch time goes. What do you say, since we're going to do the proverbial quick one. Let's light up a lightning round.
You'll have to excuse my friend. He's a little slow.
Luckily, I have prepared for such an event. The lightning round!
This is one of those lightning rounds. You can't find me because I'm hiding in my part of town. So let's get this thing going round another lightning round.
Fantastic work. Really, really incredible. That was something. A-plus effort. Yeah, back to the lightning round, where I ask Steve a whole bunch of questions as quickly as I can. We begin with, today on Sports Illustrated, Alex Pruitt wrote an interesting article that had me completely shocked that I'm going to say these words. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman has done a better job at handling the coronavirus than NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. I was floored when I read the headline, even more shocked when I was reading the article, hearing that Bettman was not just doing the right thing, kind of socially following along, but actually following medical guidelines when advising teams about what to do during their pause season. The article points out that there was no objection by owners stopping the season immediately, and that while they were initially following the NBA's lead, Bettman and Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly agreed it wouldn't seem right to test their players regardless if they were or were not showing symptoms. A lot of this was because of the backlash that the NBA got when they were seemingly buying tests for all of their players if they were showing symptoms or not, which were tests that were needed for six people that actually needed to know if they did or did not have this virus. To this point, just seven players have been confirmed to have tested positive for the coronavirus, five on the Senators, two for the Colorado Avalanche. In the league, apparently has a master list with anybody who's been tested, but they're not going to give it out publicly. All of this comes back to the NHL doing the right thing. Quote, right now they're doing the right thing and saying they're not going to test in any way different than what's recommended. That's a quote from University of Toronto Director of Center for Vaccine Preventable Diseases, Dr. Natasha Kraukoft. I hope she has a good business card to fit all of those words on it. I thought that the NBA was going to get all of their players tested to see who was sick or not, and then how quickly that would kind of be a guideline as to how quickly they could get back. Now I'm realizing that goes against everything that experts on TV have been saying for weeks. Gary Bettman did the right thing is a phrase that has me baffled, befuddled, and bamboozled. The NHL's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic is blank.
You know, that's one of the best questions yet. It seems like a simple answer because I want to say surprising. But while he's been a buffoon in how he's handled things, the people around him have usually been pretty good. It's been the owners who've sometimes misstepped. So how about pleasantly surprising and leave it at that?
That'll work. The Ball family is back. This time it's brother LaMelo who's making news out of Australia, and in case you forgot, LaMelo followed his father's advice by going to play in the Big Baller Brand Basketball League in Lithuania or somewhere else in Eastern Europe, along with his brother LiAngelo, so that the two could escape the restrictions of the NCAA so that the Balls could make money playing basketball and have the spotlight on them. Didn't work out too well for LiAngelo, who went undrafted, but now LaMelo is a projected number one pick in the NBA draft thanks to that journey to Australia now. But here's the fun twist in all of this. LaMelo bought the NBL basketball team that he is playing for. On an announcement today, his manager Jermaine Jackson announced, "We own the team. It's a done deal." No financial details of this deal have been announced at this time, but I'm not sure how this will work out, seeing that LaMelo is going to be in the NBA and owning a team at the same time. Does he get to sign his own checks in the NBL for the rest of the season? Is he exempt from the salary cap because he's an owner? Has there ever been an owner player in any sport before? And what kind of disaster is going on in this team where the team has to sell to one of their own players? LaMelo Ball buying his own Australian basketball team is blank.
Well, first of all, for anybody who hears Jermaine Jackson, no, he's not one of the Jackson Five who's a year older than Michael. That's not him. Thanks, he's the man. Guy who, trust me, people my age are like, wait, who? Buying his own team is the most Ball family thing ever.
It is. Last one here. The first edition of Tiger versus Phil, a little bit of a disaster. The hype was too much. The stream that it was being hosted on crashed and they gave it away for free. It was on Thanksgiving Day. It didn't come close to anything anybody thought it was be. It was like getting Manny Pacquiao Floyd Mayweather 10 years later than we actually got it and there weren't punches thrown. Now there's rumors being floated around that we're going to get a second edition of this battle with the possibility of two more celebs being added in. Allegedly, it will also be done so that the proceeds of the gambling and the stream go to the health workers fighting COVID on the front lines, and would also have to coincide with public mandated guidelines like social distancing, which golf seems like it would be pretty easy to do. Everyone touches their own clubs. There's no sharing carts. You don't touch the pin. You don't touch anybody else's balls. I just need sports. I think this could work. Tiger versus Phil versus two celebrities in a golf battle is blank.
I think I'm just going to say roll the tape of what you just said because it's ridiculous. But you know what the sad thing is? And I'm going to say it's ridiculous. The sad thing is, when's it on?
Nobody knows. It could happen at any time. They might just spring it on us like it's some pop-up shop.
All right. Well done, by the way. That's piecemealing together a lightning round when we need it most. All right. That brings us to break time. What can I say? We did an hour in the 4 o'clock hour. We've got a thing or two up our sleeves. So Sports Talk is next. 95.3 The Score.
Huzzah!